This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. If you think surfing the waves is impossible in a landlocked state, we'll talk to some adventurers who prove it can happen here. That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. The owner of a Monongalia County construction firm pled not guilty last week in a conspiracy plan to harbor dozens of migrants who worked for him illegally. William Ehlenfeld, U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of West Virginia, tells Maria Young the case is big and unusually sophisticated.
Hector Reyes owns and operates A&M Homes, LLC, which is a custom home building company in Morgantown. And what has been alleged in the indictment is that Mr. Reyes arranged for and made payments to facilitate the smuggling of illegal aliens into the United States to work for him as laborers for A&M Homes.
Was he actively involved in helping to facilitate these folks coming across the border?
So, yeah, he was involved in it. And by that, I mean he was paying for these individuals to be smuggled into the United States. He would pay $5,000 or $8,000, or in one instance for one individual, he paid $19,000 for an individual to be able to come into the United States, to be smuggled into the United States. And then these individuals owed him a debt, and so they worked off that debt by working for him at A&M Homes until they were able to work off the debt.
Is this common?
It's not common in the Northern District of West Virginia. This was a very sophisticated scheme that Mr. Reyes put together. When the IRS sent him a notice in 2022 telling him that he had been using the incorrect Social Security numbers, he doubled down. He didn't agree or acknowledge that that was the case. He submitted additional false information to the IRS, which is quite bold. There were somewhere between 60 and 80 individuals that he caused to have smuggled into the United States. So it's a large number from different parts of the world. When you add up the numbers, he spent close to $500,000 to bring individuals into the United States.
I'm just wondering if some of these folks could be considered somewhat victims of this conspiracy.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think a lot of these people were simply hoping to make a living, probably send money back home to their families. This is a highly sophisticated and a unique criminal operation that he had going here in North Central West Virginia, and not something that we typically see.
That was U.S. Attorney William Ehlenfeld talking with Maria Young about a large scheme to bring illegal workers to West Virginia. When North Carolina poet Clint Bowman couldn't find the writing group he needed, he formed the Dark City Poets Society in Black Mountain. Bowman used the group to develop his poetry and encourage others. Inside Appalachia's Bill Lynch recently spoke with Bowman about his new book, If Lost, and forming poetry groups.
Would you like to read something?
I was going to read basically the title poem for the whole book. So If Lost, it happens at the very end, but I feel like it kind of captures the collection pretty well. So I'll read If Lost. Look around, establish your bearings. Take note of the scratched hemlock where the trail turns south. Don't rely on wives' tales or the growing patterns of moss. Notice nature warn itself of your intrusion. That warbler isn't singing to you. It's alerting the bear around the bend. Know your way out so you can tell someone lost one day. Go downhill if disarrayed. Act like water. Don't be afraid.
Tell me about that poem, which also kind of leads into the whole idea of the collection, which is broken into three parts, right? You've got establish your bearings, notice nature, don't be afraid. Talk about that poem and then kind of branch into the, I guess, the whole collection.
So the whole idea of it actually originally came to me whenever there's maps all over. You know, I had to go out hiking a ton, and I do it a lot for my job and just for on my spare time as well. And there was a map of the area that actually said, if lost, question mark, and then it just said, go downhill. And that was all they said. And so that kind of started the whole idea of these sayings that people have for what to do if lost. And so then I ran with that idea and put together, if lost, the poem, throwing in things like the wives' tales and the moss and the way that moss grows on trees and to go downhill and act like water. I kind of wanted to loop that all back into how everyone I feel like is lost in some way. The book is split up into three different sections. Each section is a line from this poem. So you have establish your bearings. And so that kind of sets the setting of the book and really brings the reader kind of into the place of where If Lost takes place, which is heavily influenced by where I currently live in Black Mountain and where I grew up in Davidson County, which is closer to the Piedmont region of North Carolina. And so you kind of get the setting through establish your bearings. And then in section two, notice nature, I try to do a lot more parallels between kind of like human suffering and environmental suffer and how everything and everyone is kind of lost in some way. And then the don't be afraid in section three kind of brings it all full circle and saying, you know, you're probably not as lost as you think you are, and just stay calm and don't be afraid and you'll be on your way, basically. I kind of use that as the framework for the whole poem and try to keep it very simple on those three steps to take if you're lost, you know, metaphorically or physically. I put it at the end just kind of as a way to kind of bring it all full circle.
Talk a little about your writing life and how that connects with the rest of your life.
Yeah. So I really started writing poetry in high school. One of my English teachers, I really just latched onto poetry because I'm not a really strong reader. I started really diving into poems and dissecting them for papers and projects and getting into it that way. And then went to college, took a few classes in poetry, didn't major in it, went to college for parks and recreation because I wanted to be outside. And so I never really lost track of it. But then out of college, that's when I started forming community poetry groups. My first job was with an arts council. I formed a community poetry group through them. And that was completely free, open to all ages. That was when I really first started connecting with real writing mentors who helped me in my writing and had a major impact on the way that I write and edited my work. And then once I moved to Black Mountain a little over 5 years ago, I really missed that community poetry group. I looked for one here that was very similar to the one that I had started in the fact that it was free and open and had a regular schedule. And so maybe once or twice a month doing something. And I didn't find anything specifically in Black Mountain, which I found surprising because Black Mountain has a very rich poetry and artistic history. And so I partnered with the library here to create the Dark City Poet Society. That group has taken off like crazy, and it's in all the good ways, but we are a very large group, and it has had even a bigger impact on my work in writing, because we do one critique a month and one poetry reading a month, and the feedback that I get from all these incredible writers has helped me a ton. I'm definitely indebted to them in a lot of ways, and I definitely give them a lot of credit for where my writing is, because I wouldn't be here without their support, really.
You mentioned being kind of an introvert, so tips for other introverts who want to read poetry out loud.
My biggest tip would be to read out loud to yourself and get used to the sound of your voice and reading, just getting used to reading out loud. It sounds a little weird, but I read out loud basically every morning. I'm used to hearing my voice, and then going out and just getting experience, because it's different reading to yourself and then getting behind a mic and hearing it reverberate back to you a little bit. So it takes a lot of practice to get used to that. And I still stumble so much on it, and it scares the crap out of me every time I get up behind a mic. So I've gotten a little bit more used to it. I realize it's not, you know, more of the poets that I look up to.
Clint, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
That was poet Clint Bowman speaking with Inside Appalachia's Bill Lynch. Clint Bowman is scheduled to give a talk on the importance of poetry communities Saturday morning at the West Virginia Book Festival in Charleston. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:53. Mostly cloudy skies today. A chance of rain, snow possible in higher elevations. Highs today in the 40s and 50s. Tonight, mostly cloudy. A slight chance of rain or snow in the mountains. Lows in the 30s. Tomorrow, variable cloudiness. Chance of rain in the east. Highs in the 40s and 50s. Support for WVPB is provided by Marshall Health, providing comprehensive primary and specialty care throughout southern West Virginia and the tri-state region. More at marshallhealth.org. West Virginia, a landlocked state, is becoming a fall destination for surfing. The fall's Gauley River rafting season is in full swing. Brianna Heaney went down to the river and talked to some landlocked surfers. Here's that story.
It's a crisp fall day, and the leaves are showing the early glimmers of red and yellow. Standing on a sandy beach, deep in the Appalachian Mountains, Andrew Wagner wears a wetsuit and holds a surfboard. He points to the canyon walls that surround this spot on the Gauley River called Diagonal Ledges.
No cell service out here, but it's gorgeous. Cliff walls, these beautiful sandstone cliff walls.
Other surfers stand on a narrow black rock ledge, holding their surfboards, waiting for their turn to surf.
You're standing there, you're looking at it, the white water is frothing, you're frothing.
Once it's the surfer's turn, they take one big leap. Holding the board to their body, they belly flop into the wave. A few seconds of furious paddling, and they slide into the little valley between two peaking waves.
Behind you, it's over your head. And in front of you, it's over your head. So you're down in this trough, and the water is coming to the top of the wave and breaking back down and crashing, and it's aerated and it's foamy. And that's kind of like holds you in there. But then you need to pop up. You need to get to your feet.
Get up in that classic surfing position. You know, arms out, feet wide. This is river surfing on the Gauley.
River surfing. It's the season.
Starting in September, millions of gallons of water are released from Somersville Lake into the Gauley to help prepare the lake for winter. It's a great opportunity for rafters, kayakers, and surfers to enjoy the rare high flows of the river.
Lately, the scene's been pretty cool. Like, a lot of people have been getting into it.
Wagner says being in the wave is the best part, but it's also fun watching each other surf and feeling a part of that community.
You're out here with your friends. You're hearing the cheers of your friends. And that's like one of the most exciting, awesome parts about it is like being out here, sharing the stoke, and people rooting for you.
One of those cheering voices is Wagner's friend, Brian Bridgewater. Bridgewater started off as a climber, then met some whitewater kayakers and got into kayaking. Then, through that, met some river surfers and started river surfing.
I flopped and flailed around a whole lot my first year trying it.
Now, almost a decade later, he's an experienced river surfer. River surfing is a growing phenomenon. According to the National Geographic, it's one of the fastest growing sports in landlocked regions with powerful rivers. Here in Appalachia, where there's an abundance of whitewater, river surfing is really catching on. It's even got the attention of ocean surfers.
I've gone to the beach, and they're like, oh, where do you live? Like, where do you normally surf at? And I'm like, oh, I live in West Virginia. And then they just give you an awkward stare. Oh, that's a landlocked state. Like, where do you normally surf at? And I'm like, on the rivers. And they're just like flabbergasted, to say the least. So,
a couple of landlocked surfers.
Yeah.
From Diagonal Ledges on the Gauley, I'm Brianna Heaney with West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
West Virginia.
Yeah, West Virginia. Yeah.
That's where it gets down.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University and Marshall University School of Journalism and Mass Communications. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Keelan Bailey, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, Maria Young, and Randy Yowie. Maria Young produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.